I'm Dr. Leif Tapanola from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Hey, today's guest is Randy L. Teton. She's the children's author of It's Her Story, Sacagawea. Peter, I've been waiting all year to get this episode finally booked. We've got her here in the booth. Randy's here. I'm so excited.
It's important. I mean, how many actually know the whole story?
That's the thing. I think most people have name recognition and think they know the story, and maybe we've missed parts of the story. I'm going to suggest.
I think we've missed a little bit more than just parts of the story.
For sure. Yeah. Well, we're going to dig deeper into that in a bit. But first, Peter, you've got some nature in the news.
I've got some nature in the news. You know, Leif, prey species have developed tactics and techniques to hide and escape from predators prior to being eaten. You know, that's
like running away?
Like running away or jumping really high.
Sure. Yeah.
However, we've got this Japanese eel. And they've taken escape to a whole new level. Juvenile Japanese eels have been known to escape from the predator, which is another fish, after they've been eaten.
That is so cool.
Yes. So we've got some research coming out of the University of Nagasaki, who they finally kind of developed a technique using X-ray videography and markers where they can inject into these juvenile eels, and they were able to record video these eels actually escaping from a fish. When they initially saw this, they just assumed, or the hypothesis was, that the eels, when they were getting swallowed, would just move from the mouth and out through the gill slits. With the video, they captured 32 eels in their recordings, and every one of those eels had at least one part of their body swallow and reach the stomach. And what they found is that for the most part, the eels would kind of swim or climb backwards, tail fin first.
Tail first. Okay. Yep.
Out of the stomach, esophagus, and then work their way towards the gill. Of the 32 eels that were swallowed, 28 tried to escape. 13 got all the way up to the gill area.
Okay.
And 9 actually escaped.
Wow.
And of the 9 that escaped, it took an average of 56 seconds.
So about a minute being eaten in the stomach of a fish and then swimming backwards out.
Yeah, they were swallowed and they were able to work their way back out.
Wow. That's, I don't know, it's sort of disgusting and repulsive, but kind of really, a happy story for the eel.
It's a happy story, cool story. You know, as I was reading through it, they said that there was a couple that actually were all the way in the stomach, and they recorded them swimming in circles trying to find the exit door.
Wow. Life is awesome.
Yes, it is.
Really wants to live.
Yes.
So I'm guessing, I don't know if this was the purpose of the study, but people probably shouldn't eat these eels because the same thing might happen.
Unless they're cooked.
Yeah. Cook them well.
Yep.
Thanks, Peter. That was gross. Trivia time. We're going to totally shift gears. What year was the Native American $1 Coin Act signed into law? We're going to not only answer that question, but we're going to dig in to a whole lot more about it. When we come back from the break, Randy L. Teton will join us to talk about Sacagawea and so much more. Stay tuned.
Get continued access to local news and all the programs you enjoy through the Listen Live link at KISU.org, or try using your web-connected Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
Hey, welcome back from the break. I want to welcome our guest today. It's Randy L. Teton. She's the children's author of It's Her Story, Sacagawea. So first off, thanks for joining us today on The Nature of Idaho.
Yes, it's good to be here on the campus of Idaho State University, one of my ancestral campgrounds of the Shoshone people.
That's absolutely right. We're here on the territory. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll talk about Sacagawea.
So everyone listening out there, thank you for joining us. My name is Randy L. Hedo Teton. A lot of people in my community in Fort Hall know me as Hedo. It's my given name, which means metal arc. And as you mentioned, I am recently added a new hat to my bio. I am a children's author, and I recently wrote a book that has been on my heart and on my mind for many, many years, and found a wonderful publisher and editor. So I'm very thankful that I was approached to be given the space to express myself, and not only that, share the knowledge of Sacagawea's perspective from a female perspective and from a Shoshone perspective, which has been lacking in the libraries. It has been lacking in our school systems. You know, growing up here in Idaho, I think a lot of us know that in fourth grade, we learn about Native Americans. We learn about Lewis and Clark. But it's sad because we don't really learn enough for a lot of kids to know who this special young girl was and how she helped shape and develop United States history. This is not a regional or tribal or state history or story to tell. It's a national story to share. And so I'm happy to be here to share that.
So before we actually start talking about Sacagawea's story, as you were writing this book, what were your feelings, your emotions? What was going on within yourself as you were writing this book?
What was going through my heart and my mind was a lot of the voices that expressed themselves while I was growing up on the reservation. My first job was working at our Shoshone-Bannock Tribal Museum. I was 14 years old. I was part of a summer youth program. My mom actually was the museum director. She was in that role for about 10 years. And during that time, I kind of was her helper, if you will. But I always ended up taking a little bit more of a role in just helping her out. I'm her second oldest child. There's five of us. And I just always, I guess, had that in me to want to give more. And so I would say, hey, Mom, I'll mop the floors, because I know she was busy. We had visitors from China. We had buses coming in from Germany. We had all sorts of people all the way up until closing. And so I knew in order for us to get home to my siblings that she needed the help. So naturally I did. And so when the opportunity came upon me, when I enrolled in the summer youth program in Fort Hall, they asked, well, where would you like to work? And naturally I just said the museum. I don't think that would happen nowadays, but that was really, it opened up a lot of doors. I met a lot of amazing people that asked me questions about my tribal history. And one of the figures was Sacagawea. And being 14, 15, you know, you kind of take things for granted a little bit about how you grow up. And, you know, my grandparents both spoke fluent Shoshone and Bannock. And so I started asking questions to elders that would come into the museum and help my mom with some of our historical items. And, you know, I was asked the question, so I wanted to ask them. And it piqued my interest of wanting to learn more. So again, this was during the 1980s. And we didn't have Google. We didn't have AI search engines. We didn't even have computers or the cell phones we have nowadays. So I had to go to the library. And of course, you know, being from the reservation, our libraries are our elders. And so I went to my grandparents and I started asking questions. I started looking at the books that my mom had in our own little private library. And a lot of the information that I found was like two sentences about Sacagawea. And a lot of information was written based off of the Lewis and Clark journals, you know, what they predicted, what they wanted, what their hopes were for this young Native American girl. And the way I read it was different because I'm Shoshone. I'm from Idaho. I understand the tribal aspects of learning to live off the land. I understand what it takes to live off the land. If you don't have a knife, well, you create a knife. If you don't have a deer, you go for the smaller game. You know, so there's these things that we as Indigenous women, Indigenous people, know and understand that we are raised with. And when I read the journals, I had a whole different take on it. And so a lot of the information that I learned from 14 up to 19 years old, when I was given the opportunity to be a model for a U.S. Mint project, again, I did not know. I was not told that this was for a new coin that, hey, by the way, Sacagawea. I did not know that until the day of my modeling opportunity was presented to me. And they said that this is going to be for a new coin honoring Sacagawea. So that's where I was like, oh my goodness, all that information that I learned is now starting to come into play here. And I just started remembering the elders that told me, you know, good and bad stories of what they thought of Sacagawea. And again, that was even a very, that piqued my curiosity, was her story alone has many versions. You can get a version from the Eastern Shoshone and it could be different than our version from Fort Hall. And that's just kind of how tribal history is passed down. It's like, this is a Fort Hall version versus a Eastern Shoshone version from Fort Washakie. Could be kind of similar, but a little different.
And so you had an opportunity some years ago to be a model for the coin that would represent Sacagawea. What was that just overall experience like for you?
In a nutshell, it was an honor to honor Sacagawea because of the fact that I was already studying a little bit about her at such a young age. It was also, overwhelming because the U.S. Mint said, you have the opportunity to join us on our marketing team to promote this new coin, or we'll respect your wishes and we'll acknowledge you in a few events. You don't have to physically be there and you can go on with your life. It took me 2 days to make a decision. And keep in mind, audience, I was 18, 19 years old. First in my family to even go to college. I was planning to graduate with my degree 1 year after I was presented with that opportunity. So a lot is on my shoulders. And I just thought to myself, does this mean I have to quit school so I can pursue traveling with the United States Mint? And what an awesome opportunity that would be. But they worked with me. They acknowledged that I was the first in my family to get a college degree, and I was a junior senior. So that meant I really had to pick and choose where I was going to go with the United States Mint, and then also really hit it hard with my books and study while I'm traveling to get my work done at school. And I did. So the year 2000 was an amazing year for me and my family and my tribe and Indian people, because that was the year that the Sacagawea coin was introduced to the public. And that was the year that I was just kind of just placed right there on that pedestal of, you are the voice of Native American people. All these opportunities came at me all at once. And again, keep in mind, I was at the University of New Mexico living in a dorm. You know, I was just a college kid, and, you know, U.S. Mint is calling me every week. I mean, how unique is that to even say, you know, you're a college kid and you're getting called upon by the United States Mint? It was huge. It was awesome. I definitely would love to write a book about that. I mean, you know, coming from a reservation and being placed at the White House, I was rubbing shoulders with legislators and senators, tribal leaders from all over Indian country. Got to have tea with Hillary Clinton, former first lady. I got my own floor at the White House with my own security. I dressed in my buckskin regalia that my grandmother made. There were so many key moments and experiences that nobody can say they've ever witnessed in such a short period of time. I mean, all these opportunities that were given to me, and I'm just from here in southeastern Idaho, you know? I mean, who would have dreamt of being on a national coin? Yeah. I sometimes have to pinch myself that I really did this. I really went these places.
And now, is it 20-odd years later, you have a book on Amazon.com.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
So make that connection between coin in year 2000 and a book that comes mm-hmm. out 20-some years later.
Yeah, yeah, 23 years. Right. It took 23 years in the making for this book. And even though it's a children's book, I still have adults. I have historians that have been craving this story. This is an indigenous perspective. This is a story from myself of all of the stories that have been shared with me. I condensed it. I took key moments and I placed them in this story. It's interesting because the editor found me on LinkedIn and I didn't look on LinkedIn. I took it off my phone. And then I had a good friend of mine say, hey, you might want to get back on LinkedIn. There's some things happening and, you know, you would be, you should consider getting back on. So I did. I activated my account and boom, probably 3 months later, I get a message and this person is saying, are you really Sacagawea? Are you really the model for the Sacagawea coin? And I'm thinking the other way around, like, oh no, this is just a spammer, someone that wants me to promote their item or their glasses or something. And I said, yes. And they're like, we are looking for a Native American, and we were told of this lady, and it's you, and I found you. And so, you know, we as Native American people think is things align when it's supposed to. And so I'm very blessed to tell and share my story of Sacagawea from her voice, meaning from us as Shoshone women, you know, sharing that voice of what she may have experienced from the morning that she heard the war cries of the warriors coming over the mountains in Salmon, Idaho, to the point where she was trying to return back to Idaho, and then all the way to the point where she was having her baby from this stranger, you know, that she was given to. I mean, these are all things that I feel as young Native American women, they never had the ability to share their story. And I feel like this is just a part of the whole missing and murdered Indigenous women's type of campaign where they talk about, you know, young women of color, any color, are often silenced. I really felt compelled that I needed to get this story out there. And not just in memory of her, but in memory of all the young women that are silenced and they can't speak for themselves. And even though this happened in the 1800s, it's still happening today. And so I kind of feel like there's just a lot of different components of this book, even though it's a children's book. It's a book of something more important that's happening even in today's society.
Yeah, I look at it as an empowering book.
Yes.
Because we can sit back and look at the past, but by forming an empowering book like this, you're also affecting the future generations and the young women who are reading this book.
Yes.
And you're saying it's okay to have a voice and it's okay to be strong and it's okay to make sure your story gets heard and listened to.
Well, and there's opportunity to write your story and don't give up. I mean, look how long it's taken me. And in a lot of different events that I attended, you know, I would announce, you know, I would love to share my story. I'd love to write a book. It finally happened. And that's what I'm so grateful for, even though it took this long. So if anyone out there is listening, you have a story to share, don't give up. It's taken me 23 years, but look, and all these awesome, amazing opportunities been opening up now even further. You know, I was just letting you guys know that my book was recently selected. It was the honorable mention recipient of the Idaho Book of the Year. You know, things happen. I'm not chasing after anything. I really do believe that things come to you as an individual. And again, I'm very proud just to be able to share Sacagawea's voice, even though it's a small voice. It's still important. So, you know, going all the way back to the White House and doing my modeling, graduating with my degree to where I'm at right now, I'm back home in southeastern Idaho. I could have easily chosen to live in Washington, D.C. I was offered jobs throughout Indian country, but I chose to be here and at home because of my family, because it grounds me. It's my foundation. It's my cultural roots. It's just who I am and where I need to be. I'm still sharing the story through social media, and that's the way it is nowadays, right?
Right. Well, so I'm thinking about the book, and I'm also thinking about the coin mm-hmm. as ways of Indigenous people communicating their stories mm-hmm. with the rest of the world. And a big part of that, whether it's a coin or a book, is the visual language, not just the stories, but the appearance. And so obviously you modeling and being effectively the face, giving a face to a historic figure. Mm-hmm. But then talk to us about, in the book, you have illustrations in this book. It's a yes. child's book. And so tell us about the artwork that's done for yes. the book.
When I was approached by the editor, you know, in our conversations, you know, that was the next question. I went to Native American art school, so I know that it is very important to have amazing illustrations for your story. And so when I asked her about the illustrator, she said that she already had somebody. And I kind of got a little sad. I was like, oh no, here we go. You know, I'm all thinking in my mind, it's probably a non-tribal illustrator or somebody on their team. But fortunately, she said that they already had someone that they found, and she was Native American, and her name is Allie McKnight, who is actually a tribal member from my tribe. She's enrolled in Fort Hall, but I believe she lives in Utah. So her name is Allie McKnight, and she did an amazing job. She took my manuscript, and she created the landscapes. She created the designs of our Indian people. She was able to create everything that I had envisioned in my head. And it was because she understood how we lived, and I didn't have to do a lot of babysitting. I think I reviewed her visual manuscript twice, which I was told is not a typical, like usually you're doing like 50 times you're looking at it. But again, right. This book was fast-tracked. And when I say it was fast-tracked, I think I took about a month and a half to write my manuscript. And I wrote probably up to 70 pages originally and sent it off. And the editor, she's like, wow, we can do like series of storytelling, but we don't have it in the budget to do that. So therefore, she was like a teacher, and she just went and red inked it. And she said, these are the parts that we're going to keep in the story. And after we're done with this process, we're sending it to Allie. Like I said, I reviewed it twice, and then bam, the book came out. I just was so amazed at how she was able to capture Sacagawea's essence, you know, even to the point where she was visiting her family in Idaho. She hasn't seen them for years since she was taken away. I mean, there are so many different elements in this story that, you know, this is something that everyone's going to want to learn more. Please just grab the book, check it out. And I can say that I'm actually working on a part two, because I feel like there are elements of Sacagawea's story that has not been told. And I am willing to share that.
You notice, Leif, Randy L. said a small voice during this conversation. I don't think it's a small voice anymore. I think you've been able to elevate and bring recognition where it needs to be yes. and where it deserves to be. And I do kind of want to talk a little bit about Sacagawea coin.
Okay.
And what has come from that, and how her voice has gotten even larger to encompass how many thousands of voices within the United States.
So I will note that the coin was introduced to the public through Walmart. They chose a big box corporate, and it was Walmart. For 2 years, I actively participated in a lot of events, corporate, regional, numismatic events with the United States Mint, and it was amazing. But again, I was living out of my luggage and in hotel rooms. I was even on QVC. We were selling the coins, you know, so the ability of providing my voice and adding that tribal element to any of these events that I attended was huge, because a lot of people did not know who Sacagawea was, what her role, her contributions that she offered, and that she sacrificed herself during the 2 years of the Lewis and Clark journey. Those were things that I was able to add. And her knowledge of the landscape, of the resources to eat, to help these young men survive for 2 years. And when I go and do presentations to kids, I always explain to them, think of this as a 2 year camping trip. Sacagawea was the mother to all of the expedition, even though she had a baby and she was about 14 and a half years old. And if you can think about your daughter, your granddaughter, your sister, your brother at that age, you're still on that development stage. But for young Native American youth, we were already raised to live off the land, to learn how to hunt, learn how to be independent off of what you have. She already knew all this. And so she was able to utilize that during this whole 2 year camping trip, this expedition, also be able to provide for herself. And so having this knowledge and being at these events and being that voice for Sacagawea, it really did add like, oh, wow, I had no idea. Well, did you also know she was from little town of Salmon, Idaho? You know, Salmon is pretty small, but it is a very important town because it's the birthplace of Sacagawea. And I'm very thankful for the Sacagawea Interpretive Center that are keeping her history alive, and for the families from Fort Hall that are contributing to the history of keeping her family history alive and well.
And now I want to relate this to our trivia question, but I'll let you expand on this. Our trivia question, of course, was what year was the Native American $1 coin act signed into law? And the answer is
2008.
And so what does that mean for the Sacagawea coin and keeping that face on currency?
That means that Sacagawea will forever remain as the obverse, which is a technical word that the United States Mint uses, meaning the front of the coin, forever. So she cannot be removed because there was a short period of time that the United States Mint replaced Sacagawea and the beautiful eagle on the reverse. They removed both of those designs and placed United States presidents on the coin. Now, this was to, in their minds, to intrigue collectors and for people to utilize the coin because they started to see a decrease in the use of the Native American dollar coin. Now, there's a lot of factors there. One, here in Idaho, we don't have public transportation like they do in the East Coast or the West Coast. We don't have metros. The coins over there are highly used. You know, the only place that, you know, I can say here in Idaho that you can actually get or receive a dollar coin back is from the vending machine. I've received it in a Coke and a Pepsi vending machine. I also received it when I was buying stamps at the postal office. So there are a variety of different places, but again, we just don't have that. And so with this Coin Act, this allows the Dollar Coin Act to have a different design on the back side. So for those collectors or even those that are interested in learning more about what is the design for this year, definitely check out my website. I do have that information on there. You can check out the U.S. Mint website as well. They also keep everybody updated. But again, a lot of people say, I don't see the dollar coin. Does it even exist anymore? Yes, it does.
You got to buy a Coke or a Pepsi.
Yes, or go buy some stamps.
Buy some stamps. You mean the U.S. Postal Service still exists?
Exactly. So it's an interesting topic. But yes, the coin still is being created by the United States Mint. And please keep in mind that there's three U.S. Mints. There's a Philadelphia Mint, the Denver Mint, and the San Francisco. Now, if you can get a 2024 P for Philadelphia and a 2024 D for Denver and a 2024 S... for San Francisco, you've got yourself a really nice, valuable collector set. And if you add my signature, that even increases the value. So there's a lot of things that I have learned over the years.
That's awesome. And thank you, Randy L., for joining us today. We really appreciate. And I know we could probably do several more episodes with you. For all our listeners, please, if you want to learn about the life of Sacagawea, go to randylteton.com. That's where it's her story is found. And you can learn about Randy L.'s journey Thank you again very much.
Yes, thank you for having me. And for any teachers out there or museum staff, I also have a list of legit resources for people to read.
Fantastic.
The Nature of Idaho receives support from listener contributions to KISU FM. Shows are produced at KISU Studios in Pocatello at Idaho State University, with editing and production by Mackenzie Young. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at KISU.org or from Spotify and other select podcast services. Send your thoughts and suggestions to noid-kisu@isu.edu.